Welcome to Enjoy Exceptional Living. I am Lynn Fritz, your program producer and host. This program is in collaboration with Enjoy Magazine, KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio, and myself. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. In each of our programs, our intention is to bring to our listeners things that we think they're going to enjoy and things that we think are exceptional. Today, I have in the studio two individuals that are going to educate us and help us to understand the importance of dentistry from a very different perspective, working with sleep disorders. I have Rachel Barnhart. She's a doctor of dental surgery, a diplomate of the American Board of Dental Sleep Medicine, and Samantha Fletcher, commonly called Sam, registered dental hygienist and a myofunctional therapist. So we're going to find out about myofunctional, and we're going to find out all the different things that are involved in not only what they do as a general practice, but the specialization of working with sleep disorders. So Dr. Barnhart.
Hi.
Hello there, Samantha.
Hi.
Sam, it's good to see you.
Thanks
both
for having
here.
Us.
Yes,
yes,
thank you, Lynn.
Yes. So let's begin, Doctor, by describing to people what's your practice include.
So our practice is a general practice, meaning that we see all ages, from children to the elderly, doing all services in dentistry, from cleanings, exams, to restorative work, to oral surgery. And we also have a specialty side of the practice where we help individuals with sleep disordered breathing, which we'll talk more about, but sleep medicine and temporomandibular joint disease or disorder. So a variety of services.
So one of the ways we met is through my experience of being referred to your practice because I was tongue-tied and I was diagnosed having sleep apnea. So I came to the practice because I wanted to see if there could be anything done because I was tongue-tied. So we have a whole history of that process, yes, which I'm really grateful for. I learned a lot, and I will be visiting you again in the near future around that. Can you just for a moment talk to or speak to why being tongue-tied might be an issue?
So the tongue is very important in growth and development of the face. And when you have a tethering in the tongue, it actually impacts the way your face grows. It can also cause the tongue to live lower in the mouth, and that makes it hard to keep the mouth closed, and in turn can cause mouth breathing to happen. And we'll talk more about that, how mouth breathing isn't really good for you. But the tongue plays a very big role. It's one of the strongest muscles in your body, and the forces of it dictate growth along with genetics, and a tethering prevents proper positioning and function of the tongue.
So when is the best time to look for tongue ties?
The sooner the better. So I would say as soon as the baby is delivered and mom is able, having her see a provider or pediatrician or their dentist, their pediatric dentist, or myself, to be evaluated. Tethering in the tongue can be very obvious, and there can be breastfeeding concerns, but not always can it be obvious. And sometimes there's a deeper restriction in the base of the tongue that the baby can work around and feed with, and mom can be comfortable, but it still affects positioning of the tongue in the mouth, which ultimately affects breathing and growth of the baby.
I think that's one of the things that is overlooked, that maybe you can successfully eat, but long-term it changes the facial structures a child develops.
Yeah, it's incredible.
And more than even the tongue, there can be other parts of the mouth that need to be examined for ties, correct?
You are correct. Yes, the cheeks and the lips, actually, they can also have tethering, which can impact the proper movement of those muscles in the cheeks and the lips, which can affect the forces that those muscles provide and will also affect growth and development of the face.
You know, for me, I started school going to speech therapy and did lots of speech therapy.
Me too.
Yes. Actually. Because I was tongue-tied and doctor.
I was too.
Yes. So
I was Sam, actually.
Yeah, I actually had more of a, so I didn't have any issues with speech or feeding as a baby. But once I started coming to, or working for Dr. Barnhart, and we noticed that I had more of a posterior tongue tie, which I was never aware of and no one was ever aware of. And I mean, we can kind of get into it, but definitely was causing me to have some symptoms, headaches and stuff like that. So,
that's interesting.
Yeah. Getting that released by Dr. Barnhart was a very positive thing in my life, and I would have never even known.
So see, for me, after I had speech therapy, I didn't have anything that brought it up. When I got really, really cold as a child, I would kind of slur sometimes. But other than that, that was it. But headaches, ooh, that'd be horrible to have headaches.
Yeah, I get a lot of, well, I still have some residual stuff that we're going to address, but tongue tie was part of it. So,
wow.
Yeah.
So, as a dental hygienist, that's one of your roles at the practice, but you're also, your specialization in working with sleep disorders is what's called...
I'm a myofunctional therapist as well. Yeah.
And that means what?
So yeah, it's a type of therapy that helps to, it's an adjunct therapy that helps to treat sleep disordered breathing. And so it encompasses a lot of things, but some goals are to eliminate and minimize oral habits. So that might be working with kids that suck their thumbs, or suck, you know, blanket sucking, any of those, you know, noxious habits. I work to establish nasal breathing, and I work with all ages, not just kids, but these are just some of the main goals. Achieving lip competence to make sure their lips are closed and they're breathing through their nose. Attaining proper oral rest posture, which we can also talk about. And then toning the muscles of the mouth, the pharyngeal muscles, which can help just open the airway up, and just working on functional posturing of the head and neck. So there's a whole array of things, but that's kind of the gist of it.
It's so fascinating. And for me, I met you both when I was 65 and sleep apnea. I was diagnosed with sleep apnea, and I didn't want to have to use a CPAP. And so that's why I was referred to your practice. So how old were you, Rachel, when you first found out?
I was in my mid-20s when I was diagnosed, actually. I was falling asleep while I was driving.
Oh.
Yeah. Ooh. And I, that's, you know, not a normal thing to do, especially when you're a young, healthy person. So, and I really actually struggled to find out that I had sleep apnea because I didn't fit that typical profile of someone who does. I wasn't overweight, and I was young and thin and a female. And that really is overlooked most of the time when you're thinking of someone with sleep apnea. So it took me about my mid-20s, but I had symptoms and suffered my whole life.
Wow. So you were a dentist and then discovered this other aspect?
Actually, the opposite.
Oh.
Yeah, I knew that I wanted to be a dentist, so I was involved in dentistry. I was a dental assistant and working towards going to dental school. And a mentor and friend of mine, Mike Nelson, who's a dentist here locally, a wonderful man.
Yes.
He helped guide me and helped me find out about my sleep disordered breathing. But it was right before I went to dental school that I got fitted with an oral appliance for sleep apnea. And quite a journey I have had to be where I am today, because it was structurally caused why I had sleep apnea, and that's why I suffered my whole life. I was a pretty big mouth breather my whole life, had no clue that that was not a good thing to do. And so, I mean, I struggled to feed when I was an infant, and it went from there, a lot of anxiety and panic attacks and just really poor sleep quality. And he helped me figure out that I had sleep apnea. I got a sleep study done, which showed that I did have obstructive sleep apnea, a mild form, but I was very symptomatic. And that can be very deceiving when you see a mild diagnosis. You think, oh, then it's mildly impacting me. That doesn't, it doesn't correlate whatsoever. The mild just means the number of events that you're obstructing in your sleep, but not the severity of it impacting your health whatsoever. So it was very symptomatic, and he helped me get an oral appliance, and I started wearing one even before dental school happened. So it's been a part of me for a very long time, just this this curiosity in this field, just trying to figure out what was wrong with me and trying to find the right people to help me.
So through your own personal journey, you end up developing an expertise, getting trained so you can help other people.
Oh, yes. It's quite a passion of mine, because for one, how much I struggled to find help. I was very grateful to have Dr. Mike in my life to help guide me and get me to the right people. But even the oral appliance over time wasn't as effective as I needed it to be. And being a young person, thinking about being on therapy my whole entire life, that's a hard thing to do. And eventually I ended up having jaw surgery, and both of my jaws were repositioned in a more forward position and went through orthodontic treatment a second time with the jaw surgery. And that ultimately is what corrected my obstructive sleep apnea.
Wow. How old were you when all that was completed?
I was 30 years old.
Wow. Yeah. Started when you were roughly?
In my mid-20s is when I started the journey of getting diagnosed and looking into therapy. So it was a journey for me. And I do recommend therapy first, just to get the relief that you need. But ultimately, it was the structures of my face that was limiting the airflow and causing the sleep apnea. And so by structurally repositioning my jaws, it opened my airway. And I also did myofunctional therapy before and after my surgery and a tongue tie release. And that provided the foundation and support to allow the surgery to be successful and prevent relapse afterwards.
You know, it's so fascinating, and it changes that had to be done to you structurally.
Mm-hmm.
Did those come about, those issues come about because you were tongue-tied as an infant?
Yes, I had a posterior tongue tie like Sam, and so it wasn't diagnosed, but my mom did struggle. My palate was also very high and irregular shaped, but come to find out your palate is, the shape of it is a lot dictated by your tongue. The tongue molds the palate. So if your tongue can't live up there, and especially if your mouth is open, it causes you to grow more long and narrow. And that made it very difficult for me to latch. And so that was the beginning of the lack of growth and development that just continued through all of my years of growing and slowly got worse as the years went by.
And, you know, I think what's my intention inviting you both into the studio is so that people can educate themselves about they're an adult and they're tongue-tied and they're having sleep apnea issues, or there's someone in the family or themselves mouth breathing, and if they have an infant, to take measures right away for an assessment.
Yes, because there is a genetic correlation that can make that baby more prone to developing sleep apnea if anyone in their family has it. And just because maybe nobody does in their family doesn't mean that they won't get it either, because there are environmental factors that play a role and actually can cause genetic mutations and make that baby more prone to having restrictive frenums or oral ties in the mouth.
Yeah. So when someone is a mouth breather when they're sleeping, is it also a factor if they're awake and a mouth breather?
Yeah. The more you mouth breathe, the more it's going to cause your face to grow downward and backwards. The less you do, the less severe that is. So if you mouth breathe all the time, you're going to be worst case scenario, which was me.
Mm-hmm.
But if you just do it at night, well, that's still 7 to 9 hours every night that you're causing that not ideal growth trajectory to occur. So it will still impact your growth and development.
And I know for me, in working with you on my tongue release, one of the things, and we'll talk about this later in the program, why and all the details around it, but kind of whet the appetite for our listeners, what radically changed for me is when you had me tape my mouth. So that I wasn't breathing with my mouth open. So that was huge. And it's a practice I do every night.
Yes, as we all do.
Yes.
Yeah. Good job, Lynn.
Yes. Sam, for you, found out about your issue as you were in the dental practice.
Yeah.
So roughly what age were you?
Well, probably around 30. Yeah. I mean, I've had headaches forever, but I thought maybe it was more of a hormonal thing, because I get migraines too, and haven't really dove into why that is. But yeah, I started working at the office and started getting educated, and Dr. Barnhart was awesome and would take me to all of her, you know, extra educational courses, and I started learning a lot and really becoming fascinated with it, and then obviously recognizing things in my own life that correlated with what I was learning. And so it was a big eye-opener, and I'm still on that journey myself. There's definitely some things I'd like to do that I haven't done yet. And so it's kind of fun to go along this journey and be practicing it, but also
benefiting
in my personal life as well.
Huge, huh?
Yeah, really big. It's awesome.
If you've just joined us, this is a segment of Enjoy Exceptional Living. I am Lynn Fritz, your program producer and host. This program is in collaboration with Enjoy Magazine, KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio, and myself. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. I am here in conversation with two individuals. We're talking about an interesting topic about how dentistry can play a role in resolving a sleep disordered breathing. And so it involves lots of different aspects. So I'm really inviting our listeners to think of, where am I in this process? Do I sleep with my mouth open? What's going on? Do I have headaches that I've had forever? Am I tongue-tied? I mean, for me, it was pretty obvious because it was right at the end of my tongue. But my guest today is Dr. Rachel Barnhart, the Doctor of Dental Surgery, Diplomate of the American Board of Dental Sleep Medicine, Samantha, as we call affectionately Sam Fletcher, a registered dental hygienist, a myofunctional therapist. So let's start. I don't know who wants to start with this. What is what we would call a sleep disordered breathing?
I'll just say vaguely, and then if you want to add on, doctor. Sleep disordered breathing is a range of disorders. So one of them would just be snoring, because that's not normal, even though some people don't really think it's a big deal, and we can dive into that. But snoring, upper airway resistance syndrome is another one, and then sleep apnea, which there's two different kinds of sleep apnea. There is obstructive sleep apnea and central sleep apnea. Central sleep apnea is when your brain actually tells you to stop breathing. Obstructive sleep apnea is when there's an actual obstruction, and that's when you stop breathing in your sleep.
And what you're really treating is the obstructive.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. And it's important for people to know there are things you can do around the central issue too. Mm-hmm. Neurofeedback is one of the ways you can treat central. If perhaps a person's diagnosed and their whole issue is the brain's not firing like it should, that central disorder.
Yep.
So you can do neurofeedback and at least enhance the capacity to breathe, reducing the lack of firing. Sometimes it corrects it completely. And there's a number of practitioners in our community that do it. I do it. Dunamis Wellness Center does it. And there's some private practice therapists. So it's good to really find out what you need and to have a test.
Yeah.
Assessment is done here locally.
So with central sleep apnea, there's actually a correlation between sensitivity to carbon dioxide and being oversensitive to it.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And what happens is you have chemoreceptors in your body that will detect a certain level of carbon dioxide, and that tells your brain to then breathe. And those who are very sensitive to carbon dioxide, they can tend to have what's called high loop gain, where when they're sleeping, they have an over-response to that buildup of CO2. And what happens is they end up hyperventilating in their sleep, depleting that reserve completely. And when that occurs, the brain doesn't recognize that you need to breathe. And so a central apnea occurs. Then the muscles of the upper airway aren't told to constrict, to open the airway for breathing, because the brain isn't signaling a breath is occurring, and so collapse happens, and then obstruction occurs. That CO2 builds up again, and the cycle repeats. And that is called a Shane-Stokes respiration.
Wow.
And it's very common with those who have central sleep apnea.
You know, you just kind of put a puzzle piece together for me that I actually didn't realize was missing. My second mom had a COPD. And so she would load up with the CO2. And what I learned from that, she went on a BiPAP at night, because then it takes the CO2 out of the blood system. But they also shared with me that if she didn't have treatment, you eventually stop breathing if that CO2 isn't dissipated from the body.
Mm-hmm.
So that balance, I think sometimes we take it for granted.
It's amazing just how you breathe, how important that is, as well as not just the anatomy, but breathing retraining is also a part of myofunctional therapy.
Yeah.
And that breathing is very critical because you can just not be a very effective breather. You can be an over breather, and that provides a hypersensitivity to carbon dioxide and makes you be very prone to having central apnea. So I highly recommend doing breathing exercises if you suffer from that, because sleep apnea, there's only about 25% of the population who have obstructive sleep apnea, that it's only anatomical. The other 75%, there is another thing, at least one other thing going on that is contributing. And that makes conventional therapies like the oral appliance that we provide or a CPAP or any type of PAP therapy less effective, because you're only treating the obstructive part of the problem. It deals with the obstruction, but not the other issue. Though high loop gain can be improved upon by doing particular types of PAP therapy. The CPAP isn't as helpful because it's continuous airflow, but the BiPAP or an ASV is actually meant for those who have the Shane-Stokes respirations, because it helps them get into a cycle of breathing that is a preferred, more effective breathing, so they're not hyperventilating.
So I'm familiar with the BiPAP. The ASV, is it like that also, an apparatus?
Yep, it is a type of PAP therapy. And what it does is it regulates the way you breathe. So it helps you get into a cycle of breathing instead of just turning on when you inhale and turning off when you exhale like a BiPAP does.
You know, it was fascinating to see the impact of the BiPAP on my second mom. She was always low energy. She got towards the end of her life where she'd get kind of rummy. And she was working with a physical therapist, and he goes, "Lynn, something's wrong." So I went in there, and I knew. So I took her to the hospital, and they said, oh, her CO2 was really high. And so with the BiPAP, it purified all the CO2 out of her body, the excess CO2, and gave her that rhythm. And oh my gosh, she says, "I haven't felt this good in 5 years."
Yes.
It was transformative.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very, very powerful. Let's talk a little bit too about what are some of the symptoms someone with sleep apnea, I mean, we've mentioned some of them. How would you know if you had it?
Yeah, I'll take this one and then you can add if you want. There's so many things that can present in people in different ways. So if we're talking about children, if they're clenching or grinding, that's a sign that they most likely have sleep apnea or some sort of, you know, sleep disordered breathing. If they're snoring.
Let me ask you a question. Is that clenching only with the mouth, or would it be other?
Only with the mouth.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But there is like restless leg, you know, if they're moving around in their sleep a lot, you know, fragmented sleep. So they're waking up a lot. Or if they're sleeping, you know, really almost like dead and unable to wake up in the morning. Mm-hmm. So it kind of can, with kids, it can be tricky because it can really present itself in different ways. You might have a child that's just overly tired, that's falling asleep in class, or you might have a child that is just overstimulated and super hyperactive. And so it kind of can go both ways. And that could be because when you're not getting that, you know, when you have sleep sleep apnea, your oxygen usually drops, and that drop in oxygen kind of puts you in this fight or flight mode instead of that rest or digest mode. And so it's very complex, but simply put, it's cortisol is kind of released into the system, and then it puts these kids on overdrive during the day. So hyperactivity, you know, issues with focusing, those are signs in children. Again,
even ADHD diagnosis.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There are some people believe that that's not an actual diagnosis. It's not a thing. But regardless, if there is a child that's hyperactive, it is something that you should look into.
You got to rule it out at least.
You got to rule it out. Definitely.
Because I know in my practice, when someone comes in and it's been diagnosed with ADHD, especially if they're after neurofeedback to help treat that, which it does.
Great.
Sometimes it's trauma-based, meaning that if mm-hmm. you process the trauma, the ADHD dissipates. Because it's ADHD, any diagnosis in psychotherapy is pointing to a cluster of symptoms.
Yeah.
So if you can change those symptoms, that diagnosis goes away. So I never knew till this very moment that having an assessment done for the apnea is a factor. And I refer people all the time to Dr. Stephen Godert here in town because he does a vision therapy.
Oh, yes. So
also how the eyes and the brain talk mm-hmm. to each other.
Yeah.
A person can appear to have ADHD when it's a visual processing disorder.
Interesting.
So it can also be a breathing disorder.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yes. And if you're not getting good sleep, you're not storing your memories properly in your brain. So it's affecting that, and I can see that correlation with not processing what you need to process to work through it. If you're having obstructions and not able to have your brain work properly, I mean, because memory loss, memory, a cognitive decline, brain fog, all these things are also symptoms of sleep disordered breathing.
Yes.
So that would impact your ability to work through that trauma.
Mm-hmm. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if research in years to come shows that there's a relationship and factor in dementia.
Oh, because there is.
There's
is there
already?
There already is.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So people suffering are headed that way or have a family history.
Oh, yes.
Be better to get assessed.
Yep. You need to at least rule it out because by catching it early, you can really slow down that deterioration that's occurring.
So let's imagine someone's concerned, mouth breather, and they're experience the things we're talking about, the symptomology.
Yeah.
How do they go about getting a diagnosis or checked for sleep apnea?
Well, the only way to really know for sure is by doing a sleep study. And an in-lab study is the most accurate, especially for a child, because there are certain parameters that are checked that is not checked when you do a home test, like carbon dioxide levels and the way that they're breathing, like how many times they breathe. An adult, you have the option to do a home test or an in-lab test, but an in-lab test can screen for central sleep apnea. It can also screen for obesity hypoventilation syndrome, and that's where your oxygen level plummets for longer periods of time. So it's just the weight of the weight on mm-hmm. the airway, on the lungs, and around the throat that prevents you from effectively breathing. So you're missing out on part of the information to properly diagnose the person if you do a home test, though there are different types of home tests. Most of them I don't recommend because someone who isn't very noticeable in how they present, like you look at them and they don't look like they might have sleep apnea. They're not overweight. They're young and healthy. Maybe a female, like we were talking about earlier mm-hmm. with myself, I probably would have showed a normal sleep test if I had done it at home, but in the lab, it picked it up.
Yeah.
So much more. They can test for so much more. They're mm-hmm. just a lot more accurate.
In depth.
Yeah.
More
yeah,
in depth.
More in depth. So highly recommend it. Now, if you're a male over 50 and you're or overweight, well, there's a pretty good chance you have sleep apnea. That's the highest risk category. So doing a home test in that case, it's probably going to pick it up, but you're still missing out on potential other diagnoses that could be overlooked and then not be addressed.
Is it accurate to say if someone is snoring, they really need to have a sleep study done?
1,000%. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
1,000%. Yeah.
They should get they should do a study. I'm not saying they 100% have sleep apnea, but
you wanna
there's
roll
something
it out.
Going on. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not normal. So, and it's not good. And the longer you snore, the higher you put yourself at risk for developing sleep apnea later in life because mm-hmm. it acts like a vacuum and creates this negative pressure and it pulls on the soft tissues, creating or making them larger, more obstructive. So it's as soon as someone's snoring, they really should address that as soon as possible. And we can go through certain things like later if we want to talk about just easy things that people can do now to get started if they feel like maybe they're at risk to kind of help their quality of sleep and stuff like that.
Such as?
So mouth taping, like we discussed prior. I know that sounds weird, but it's literally just taping your lips closed at night.
And what are you using when you do the taping?
Yeah, we recommend Micropore skin-sensitive tape.
3M.
3M.
You can order it online.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's what I do.
Yep. You can get it from any pharmacy. You can also, there's something called Somnifix that's sold on Amazon mm-hmm. for kids, because we do recommend lip taping for kids as well, but for 4 years old, 4 years old and up, and they have to be on board. You don't want to force them, obviously. We don't want it to be a traumatic experience, but yeah. if they understand the importance and want to do it, there's something called MyoTape that sometimes kids like more because it has a hole in the middle. It helps to keep the lips closed, but it's not, it doesn't cover their
totally
entire
restrictive,
mouth.
Yeah.
So there's mm-hmm. different options, yeah, but that alone can help sleep quality, and it helps to protect the teeth. I mean, from a dental standpoint, I think that's why it's great. And this is kind of going off, so you can redirect if you want. But, you know, working in a dental office, a lot of the times we see symptoms that people don't even realize are symptoms. You know, so you asked what are symptoms. Like, someone may not be tired and they may not think that they have sleep apnea. But if they have a really high cavities risk and they're brushing and flossing and doing all these things, or they're clenching, grinding, if you can think of any more, but there's a lot of things we see that are presented in the mm-hmm. dental chair. And obviously mouth breathing causes dry mouth, and dry mouth is one of the leading causes of not only getting a lot of cavities, but having them grow really fast. So we try to, at the office, you know, get to the why is this happening, and mouth breathing can really protect the teeth and the mouth and the oral tissues.
Yeah, by mouth taping.
Yeah.
If you're mouth breathing at night by taping the mouth, now you're stabilizing the oral environment and allowing the saliva to do its job, which is to protect the teeth from having cavities.
Yeah. So one of the other symptoms is to, maybe you're not aware that you're breathing with your mouth open, but if you wake up and your mouth is completely dry,
yeah,
that's what it means. You've yeah. been breathing with your mouth open.
Definitely.
I know when you started having me, doctor, do the mouth taping, what happened for me immediately is the huge change is I didn't realize that micronaps, where you split second, like you want to fall asleep. I used to do that all the time. I don't do it at all now.
Wow, that's wonderful.
Yeah. So yeah. I feel better. So
yeah.
just by taping. So for me, it's not a big deal. I know I've roomed with a couple of my friends. I go, okay, she's taping her mouth. Yeah. We wanted to do that all this time.
Right. Say your goodnights because yeah. I'm about to tape.
Yes, yes. And, you know, sometimes people go, I don't think I want to go into a situation for a sleep study where I go and sleep. It's very easy to do. You know, they put you in a private room. They do hook you up to all the technology. And I slept comfortably. And what I found out for me is that they show you the actual pattern of your sleep and when you enter REM, and it gives you all the mm-hmm. detail. So it's very well worth it. And mm-hmm. usually the insurances cover it.
Yeah.
So it's very good to do.
Yes. There is one type of a home test that I know of that is the most accurate type of home test. So I would say if you are completely not willing to go into a lab, especially for someone who suffers from insomnia, so you know that it's probably going to take you a really long time to go to sleep, and then now you're in a foreign place, which is just going to exacerbate that symptom. Well, it would be good to talk about alternatives, because it's better to be screened than not screened at all.
Yeah.
So I say don't not pursue it if you feel like you're at risk, or at least want to rule it out because you're having some symptoms of like daytime fatigue, brain fog. There are so many symptoms like we were talking about earlier, but some really common ones would be hypertension and diabetes, even weight gain, having a really hard time losing weight. But then, yes, the other side of it, the brain fog, the memory loss, the mental health component of it, depression, anxiety. And, I mean, that was one of my biggest symptoms before I effectively treated mine, was I was starting to get panic attacks. And that went away after I treated it. So I would say make sure you're just getting screened somehow. And there is a very specialized type of home test. It's called a WatchPAT. PAT. I know there's probably some more out there, but just from the knowledge that I've picked up, that is different in its way of determining sleep, and by looking at arterial blood flow. So it's not your typical type of home test. So there are other options. It's just in lab study is going to be the most accurate. and pick up even more than a home test, even the watch pack could.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Thank you for that information. If you've just tuned in, this is a segment of Enjoy Exceptional Living. I am Lynn Fritz, your program producer and host. This program is in collaboration with Enjoy Magazine, KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio, and myself. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. We are here in conversation today with Dr. Rachel Barnhart, who's a doctor of dentistry, dental surgery, let me state it correctly, and a diplomate for the American Board of Dental Sleep Medicine, and Samantha Sam Fletcher, who's a registered dental hygienist and myofunctional therapist. So the specialization, there's regular general dentistry, but doctor, you've developed this specialization and it requires additional training. You've had your own lived experience where you've had the benefits of the process for yourself.
Yes. I learned so much.
Who refers you? How do you usually get clients? I know an infant can come in, but an adult, how is it referred by someone in particular?
Well, you don't need a referral to see me for a consultation to further look into this. But a lot of times a dentist, they may see signs of it. And if it's not something that they practice in their office, they may refer to me for that. The sleep centers locally, we get referrals from them, even primary care physicians. And then as far as the infants go, a lot of the midwives, different types of body workers. Like there's a lot of chiropractors in town who are very good at evaluating oral ties, and we get referrals from them as well, even lactation consultants. So a variety, because it really does require a team to address this disorder. And like we do a lot, but we don't do everything. We work with others and have a multidisciplinary approach. And that is how you're going to effectively help a person, because everyone's a snowflake.
Yeah. Very unique.
Well, I'll add to that too. It's usually if you're catching this, you know, the earlier you catch it, usually the easier would say it is. If you're catching it on an infant, you know, there's easier options. But if you're not catching this until you're an adult, it's very, there's usually multiple factors at that point that are going into it. So yeah, it's definitely takes a team. There's never one simple solution. That's what makes it more complex. Because the treatment plan is different for every individual person. And there's so many factors that can play a part. So we try to work really well with different providers in town. And that's why we offer so many different things at our office and the airway, you know, side of it, you know, the myofunctional therapy. We offer some limited orthodontics. I don't know if we're going to get into that, but then an oral appliance, which doctors kind of mentioned, you know, the gold standard for sleep apnea is PAP therapy. But some patients have a hard time tolerating the PAP therapy. So that's why we'll get a referral from the sleep centers, because we offer different oral
options.
Appliances. Yeah, yeah. That can help to aid and treat different, not every, you know, diagnosis, but some types of sleep apnea. And so we'll work together.
Yeah, we screen the individual to see if they're even a good candidate for an oral appliance. And those who aren't, we can help guide them to other therapies. Or sometimes they even just need combination therapy where maybe they can't tolerate their PAP therapy because of the pressures. But now we introduce an oral appliance. Well, now the airway is more open. So the PAP therapy, that pressure can be lowered and now it's tolerable. So they could have had a severe diagnosis of obstructive sleep apnea. Well, now it's more moderate or mild, and the CPAP can take care of the rest. So working with different modalities to help optimize treatment.
So I'm hearing you say, check for me for accuracy, every person that comes in, you do a unique assessment for them and design a treatment plan that includes your work, but perhaps you also refer and bring others in on it as a team.
Definitely.
Yes.
Yes. And it also depends on age. So adults, there is a variety of options and we discuss those. And for infants, usually it's working with that lactation consultant, a body worker to do
myofascial release.
Yes, myofascial release. Thank you, Sam. Dr. Neil Bolchandani is an infant specialist when it comes to myofascial release and oral ties. He works with children and adults as well.
And he's in Reading.
And he's here in Reading, and he's fantastic. And so we partner a lot. And so working with the lactation consultants, the different body workers, including him, and even a speech language pathologist, Nancy Grimmer, I've just started working with her recently, and she works with oral motor control for infants. I mean, this is just us talking about babies, and it can be super complicated because it's not just the tethering of the oral tissues that's preventing the ideal oral rest posture and function of the oral facial muscles, but it can be the tone of those muscles. It can also be just the brain-body connection and their ability to have coordination, the strength of those muscles. And so there's just, and then the fascial system and how it reacts to surgery if we do a release. So there's just so much to consider, and that's just infants alone. And then there's, you know, children, and the children, their treatment will vary based off their age a lot of times and how they present. Sooner we can do myofunctional therapy with SAM, the better, because it changes their whole growth trajectory. And if we catch it when they're really young, we can sometimes help them catch up in their growth. And now we've prevented them from needing orthodontic treatment when they're older and developing sleep apnea when they're older. But when the child gets older and they have more development, then orthodontics needs to be a part of that treatment to help improve the oral volume to allow room for the tongue to lift and rest at the roof of the mouth to optimize myofunctional therapy and growth. And we need to do expansion and other orthodontic treatments to help optimize the structures of the jaws and the size of the mouth to optimize the other treatments like myofunctional therapy that we do. And then when you get even older from that, well, now you're done growing. So then your therapies change. And that's why when I was 30, I had jaw surgery, because I was fully grown. I did some orthodontic treatment, but to be able to correct the position of my jaws, that's where the surgery came in. So, I mean, I'd like to not have patients have to go through surgery if we can avoid it, but sometimes that is the best option.
You know, with my tongue release, I know that before that ever occurred, I spent weeks with Sam on doing the myofunctional therapy.
Yeah.
And so every week I would go in and you would give me assignments for different exercises. Mm-hmm. So, and, you know, it was really interesting because until the tongue release, I could never touch the top of the roof of my mouth.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, my tongue didn't stick out of my mouth.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
Yeah. And so, you know, you think, well, why would you have to do exercise? Well, you're teaching your tongue to do things it's not done before.
Yeah, and I will add that we require myofunctional therapy. Well, for infants, we require it after the fact. Mm-hmm. For children and adults, we always require a certain amount of sessions prior to a tongue tie release. And then at least 3 months after is what we require, because the outer surface, the outer tissues, they'll heal, you know, within 3 weeks, but internally the muscles and the fascia and everything takes up to 3 months to heal. So if you get a tongue tie release and you don't do any exercises, the likelihood that things are going to reattach is like 100%. It's going to reattach, and it might even be worse than it was before. So that's why we work together to ensure that that didn't happen or happened as little as possible. Doing it before with you was just kind of prepping you to get you ready. And sometimes if it's not super severe, which unfortunately was not your case, we don't even have to do the surgery. Myofunctional therapy alone can get what we need, but not always the case. And so
I think that's an important point, you know, for people to hear.
Well, and I mean, what's the statistic? I think myofunctional therapy alone can reduce apneas, which is, that's the amount of times people stop breathing in an hour. That's how they grade you when you're doing a sleep. Yep, assess you when you're doing a sleep study. I think can reduce by 62% in children and by 50% in adults just with myofunctional therapy alone.
Wow.
So it's not going to fix the issue. It's not going to get rid of it, but it's definitely going to help.
Improve,
because it is the foundation, really, of how the tongue should be.
Yeah. And when you think about how do you get sleep apnea, a lot of times, if not all the time, it's due to a myofunctional disorder. And you treat the myofunctional disorder with myofunctional therapy. And a tongue tie release just optimizes the therapy. That's the point of it, because the goal of the therapy, like Sam had discussed earlier, one of them is getting the tongue to lift and fully be at the roof of the mouth from the tip to the base of the tongue. It should be touching the roof of the mouth, have enough surface area to do that, having suction to stay. So when you're sleeping and all your muscles are relaxed, your tongue actually stays up and your mouth stays closed. And the forces of the tongue by living up there, and when you swallow, having it lift and press up there, and the muscles of the cheeks and lips, all of that working in harmony together is what has the face come forward and outward.
Yes. I can remember also my tongue would always rest prior to this work against my front teeth down, and then to have it rest up, practice having it up, in the top of the mouth, the roof of the mouth, or whatever you want to describe it. So it made things very different.
Yeah.
I mean, I would breathe different during the day.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that's incredible. Yeah. And like a tethering in the tongue, Sam had mentioned earlier about children, you know, if they present with clenching and grinding, this goes for adults as well, how that can be a symptom. Well, tethering in the tongue, it's like an anchor, and it causes the tongue to fall down and back into the throat. And it may not fully obstruct the airway, but it can partially. And when that occurs, pressure changes happen in the upper airway, and it can form a vacuum and actually pull stomach acid up. And we call that silent reflux, laryngeal pharyngeal reflux. And that makes the back of the throat very sensitive. So if you're someone who like easily gags, especially when you're at the dentist, like you could have some silent reflux. And so it's called silent for a reason. You have no symptoms at all, except for maybe you clear your throat or you're gaggy, your soft tissues are red. Well, maybe you have a tongue tie, and that in response to all of that while you're sleeping, a lot of times you'll clench at least. You might grind too, but clenching and that not only isn't good for your teeth, but it's not good for your joint health too. Mm-hmm. It can break down the joint itself and cause other problems. So just releasing the tethering with myofunctional therapy can help reduce the clenching and grinding and the snoring. And the therapy helps tone and strengthen the musculature of the back of the throat and the tongue itself, which just helps open the airway. So it just optimizes any treatment that's done.
Do you think it can also be a factor? You mentioned silent reflux, but if a person has acid reflux and they're in treatment for that and they have a tongue tie and obstructive sleep, probably working with that's going to also impact the reflux.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It can definitely exacerbate it.
Yes.
For sure. So diet plays a big role, but the anatomy definitely does.
Definitely.
I think
yes.
It's kind of crazy too, because when you were asking how do we get patients, I'd say probably 50% of our patients that we see for airway are just start out as our dental patients, and we see all these symptoms. They don't even realize, you know, maybe they have really uncontrolled high blood pressure. We can see a lot of wear and tear on their teeth from clenching and grinding. Maybe we see some acid erosion from acid reflux. There's a number of things. And then, you know, then we start asking questions. How's your sleep? Oh, it's not great. Okay. Well, maybe we need to, or maybe they're even on a sleeping pill and they just have never, no one's ever recommended that they have a sleep study. And so a lot of it is that we see the signs and they're not even aware of it, and just educating our patients and really letting them know that this could be related to this. And this is something we should check out if you're interested. And so it's nice being able to see those things and provide that service and that education so that people can get relief if they're not even aware it's a problem.
And I also think, as in my case, I thought I slept really well. Well, I did sleep, but I was tired.
Yeah.
So I wasn't having quality sleep.
Yeah.
So that makes a huge difference.
It's a good point to make, because you don't know any different than yourself.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times we just think what we are, how we are, is normal because we have nothing to compare it to. And when you finally get the treatment, if it's needed for you, and you see the difference, it's like, wow, what, this is what normal's supposed to be like. I mean, I even felt like that when I had jaw surgery and I woke up out of surgery. I still remember the first breath I took when I woke up from surgery, and I realized this is how it's supposed to be. to breathe. It was so effortless and so easy. I had so much resistance and airflow when I would breathe through my nose before. I would be so red when I would work out. People would ask me, are you okay? Because I would look like I was about to pass out. And just, I didn't know. Because, or like your tongue, for instance, you just think your tongue should
be where it is.
And that's the right place. And that's not necessarily the case. Or how you breathe isn't necessarily the best way to breathe. So, yeah, when you don't know any different, it's easy to think that this is normal.
Yes. Yeah. If you just tuned in, this is a segment of Enjoy Exceptional Living. I am Lynn Fritz, your program producer and host. This program is in collaboration with Enjoy Magazine, KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio, and myself. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. We are here in conversation talking about how dentistry can play a role in working with sleep disorders. We have in the studio Dr. Rachel Barnhart, Doctor of Dental Surgery, a diplomate of the American Board of Dental Sleep Medicine, and Sam Fletcher, registered dental hygienist and myofunctional therapist. We're quickly running out of time, but one of the things I wanted to ask you about, we talked about that oral appliance. Is an oral appliance something like, you know, you can order them online, or you can go by a drugstore and you insert them in the mouth and you breathe better? Is that what you're talking about?
It's good to clarify that, because you can find them online, but there are a lot of risks with taking on that type of treatment yourself. I have learned so much through the mastery program I went through the American Academy of Dental Sleep Medicine, and I just do not recommend someone doing it on their own, because the side effects are so great.
Yeah,
including just, for instance, just joint problems too, like jaw joint problems. And that's just one side effect. So I would really have someone take caution with trying to do this on their own. You should get a custom made appliance. There is so many different types of appliances out there, and you need to be evaluated to see what appliance works best for you with your anatomy, with your sleeping habits. There is so much to consider to be fitted for the right type of appliance for it to be effective, and also to be monitored and guided in titrating that appliance to a therapeutic setting and having it ultimately calibrated in a sleep lab to confirm that it's actually fully addressing the sleep apnea. So that's what I recommend.
Yes, that makes sense.
There can also be side effects, you know, so to have a dentist overseeing that to help you with those issues, should they happen, is definitely better than just trying to handle that on your own.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's been my experience. Custom is always better than just kind of picking up something off the shelf.
Yeah. I agree.
So that's why I say I'll be visiting you in the future. do you think all the concern around tongue ties and looking at infants, is that just a fad, or you think that's here to stay?
I think it's here to stay, but there's just a lot of information on the internet, and it can be really confusing when you go on there, and even some research articles, and you'll read it and go, oh, tongue tie, it doesn't really do anything. And I think the missing piece here is that myofunctional therapy wasn't a component of it. Because if you don't do myofunctional therapy, the release doesn't stay. Your body is made to heal itself. It's incredible how we were made. And if you do not control healing, delay healing by doing the exercises afterwards to allow that tissue not reattach, then it's going to ultimately do so to some degree. And then now you're going to have fascial strain, and that can act as a restriction itself, or scar tissue formation that can be very restrictive. And if you're not doing myofunctional therapy beforehand in a child and an adult, like what we do, well, then you can't get as good of a release. And that's why we require it before I do the release, is it actually helps the muscle tone, and it helps me see where the restriction is so I can follow and get all the restriction out. Otherwise, I can't go where I need to go, because the tissues are not prepared for release. It just optimizes healing afterwards, reduces discomfort after the release, and then sets the stage for recovery.
Yeah. Before I came to see you, I had had a general practitioner cut my tongue twice. And then neither one of them worked.
Yeah.
So the third time they went to do it, I went, no, I'm going to try something different.
Yeah. Yeah. You're a testimony to that there.
Definitely. We're almost out of time. So how do people find you, Dr. Barnhart? Sam?
Do you want me to go like our phone number
address? Yeah, okay. Please.
So the name of our office is Rachel Barnhart DDS. It's located at 2190 Larkspur Lane, suite number 100. That's here in Redding, California, 96002. Our phone number is 530-222-1400. Our website is www.rachelbarnhartdds.com. We have a lot of information on everything we've discussed today, mm-hmm. a lot of resources on our website. We also have an Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of fun things on there, some informational, some silly. And so you should check us out. Our Instagram is at Rachel Barnhart DDS, and that's spelled RachelBarnhartDDS. Facebook is under Rachel Barnhart DDS, and TikTok is at Rachel Barnhart DDS.
Hey,
so
that's perfect.
Check us out. Yes. Yeah, give us a follow.
Website?
I said it. Yeah, www.rachel.
What I was going to say, they can see information also about doing assessments and the whole spectrum we've been talking about.
Yeah, all of our services that we provide are listed on our website.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I want to thank you both, not only for coming in here today, but for how you've impacted my life in a very positive way. And that's why I want you to come in and educate our community about options and concerns and focusing on things. So
thanks for having us.
Oh,
yes,
absolutely.
Thank you, Lynn.
Absolutely.
It was a joy to work with you.
Well, you guys are fun people, so that works. We've had as our guest today Dr. Rachel Barnhart, Doctor of Dental Surgery, Diplomate of the American Board of Dental Sleep Medicine, Samantha Sam Fletcher, Registered Dental Hygienist and Myofunctional Therapist. This is Enjoy Exceptional Living. And as we leave today, we want to encourage you to think about and share this information with friends. You can call and make an appointment for an assessment. Don't let yourself continue to snore. Don't let yourself continue to have bad sleep.
Yeah,
find out what's going on. It's very imperative to your well-being. So that's hopefully the message people heard from us today.
Yeah,
get healthy.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You want to live long and well.
That's right.
Yes. And so as we leave the program today, I want to encourage Dr. and Sam and our listeners and myself to make this day and every day a day to enjoy exceptional living. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Lynn.
Thank you.